Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Brian Rice, Director of the Office of Wildland Fire at the U.S. Department of the Interior. Also joining me from IBM is Lisa Yarborough. So, Brian, it would be good to help our listeners understand better what is wildland fire and what role fire plays in natural resource land management. Some fires, as when I was doing some research for this, they need to be suppressed, and sometimes they don't. So could you describe that decision space for whether to fight a fire or not?
Fire is very important. Fire is an incredibly important part of the ecosystem. If you look at our landscape across this country, whether it's rangeland or forested land, woodlands, which is that in-between types of forested land, they're all have some nexus to fire. Even farmers you see in the Midwest, they burn their stubble fields after the harvest, right, to cycle nutrients. And so fire has this incredible, incredible place in the landscape. There's stands of different types of pine species that need fire. The heat actually releases the seeds from the cones. So if you look at a very commonly known species, the ponderosa pine, ponderosa pine has an extremely thick bark. It's in an ecosystem that needs fire. It cleans out the underbrush. It cleans out the lower, smaller vegetation and allows the tree to grow healthier and stronger, as well as repopulate, germinate seeds from the cones that are coming down. So there's this incredible need for fire in the landscape. How do we get to that place where we actually say, this fire we actually need to address? And I would say in the federal space, every fire has some type of response. The response may be just to watch and monitor to ensure that the fire is not threatening infrastructure, public, any other type of safety that goes with it. But ultimately, there's a decision that's made to be more aggressive or to be monitoring. So how do we get there? Within the federal estate, and then even on state lands, and you find it on private forested lands as well, there's always some type of management document. There's always some type of management direction. There's intent where maybe it's a 20-year look at that particular land base, or it's a 100-year look. And within so many years, there's a focus on protecting certain species or improving different types of wildlife habitat, improving deer habitat or elk habitat is quite often a promising note. In other areas of the country, there's other species, like within the Great Basin states across the country, Nevada, Utah, parts of northern Arizona, New Mexico. There's other species there as well. And so there are numerous reasons. Within those land management plans, so the forest management plans, land use management plans, all the different documents that go with it, of which most are available online. You can find them by looking at any Department of Natural Resource or any federal agency. You'll see an approved, updated plan. It will identify what's the priority when it comes to fire. So what we find across the country, though, is that roughly 97 to 98% of all fires are stopped right away. So we call that our initial attack success rate. So initial attack means somebody spots a fire, public, an aircraft, somebody calls in and says, we see smoke, we think there's a fire. 97, 98% of all those fires are stopped within 24 to 36 hours. We call it the first operational period. Other than that, beyond that, those are the fires that usually are bigger and require more attention.
So on that, you might have answered my question, but we can elaborate a little bit more, is that, you know, many citizens see these raging wildfires on the news and consider these catastrophic fires as the norm. What percentage of the total fires in a year are suppressed versus the large ones that we see on the nightly news?
Right. That's a great question, and it's really important because the news always shows the giant flames and it looks really scary.
It does.
Right. Well, so that 97-98% is the amount that never make the news. So you only see 1 or 2%. And of that actually makes the news, there's probably only a fraction of that. The other thing that's of note here, so in a given year, in a normal year, 70 to 75,000 fires happen across this country. And a fire can be as small as a campsite mm-hmm. area, and then a fire can be as big as the large acreage, massive fires that make the news. But they all count as one. Mm. And so we have that many. A huge percentage, a majority of them actually happen on state lands. So a smaller percentage actually happen on federal lands. And then you might think, well, what happens if you have a fire that starts on federal land and then burns onto tribal land and then over to state land? It's usually identified as where the origin was. Okay. So there's that piece of it as well. The last thing I might throw in here is a fact it's pretty important, and it gets into some of the other work, how I was talking about it's important to work with our public and our stakeholders and make sure that the public really has a stronger grasp on fire. And that's roughly 90% of all of our fires are human caused. Yeah. Cigarettes, dragging chains off of trailers, campfires left unattended, any number of things can happen. But 90% of those 75,000 fires, of which majority happen on state lands, another type of public land, are human caused. Mm-hmm. So it really creates this interesting situation where we talk about fire and say, can we fix this through managing the landscape? Is it through prevention, working with our partners? There's a lot of points to it. It's complicated.
So it is very important. I appreciate you setting the context around giving us some interesting things to think about. And we shift from that to your office and specifically. And really, what is your strategic vision and what are your key priorities for OWF?
Right out of the gate, the first thing that we're looking at bringing together is this notion of interoperability. And interoperability to me means that when you see that big fire on the news, there's also a lot of people that are with it, right? And sometimes you see a fire engine, and the fire engine will usually have the logo on the door so you know where it's from. Maybe it's from the state of California, maybe it's from the state of Oregon, could be from Florida, and it was moved out west. All of those nozzles, all of the components that are on those engines fit together. Many of the tools that our firefighters use across the country have components that they can pull off of one truck and put onto another. They can pull out of their pack and work with another. And without that interoperability, this would be an extremely difficult challenge to address. And so the interoperability, while much great, great, great work has been done on those pieces about interoperability, we have a mountain ahead of us to climb on other areas. So as technology is developed, as our workforce is growing and developing, there's needs that are really sort of developing that haven't had the legwork put in on it yet in terms of the interoperability needs. And so that's a major focus. Mission within DOI and the Office of Wildland Fire is really ensuring that we have safe and effective fire management activities, right? Firefighter safety is paramount. We're not going to put a firefighter in harm's way when it's not needed. And then the public is right there with it if there's the need to ensure that the public's being kept safe in those situations as well. So that's really ultimate.
You know, I'd like to talk a little bit more about what you're calling interoperability and really get into the fact that, you know, given the interagency nature of wildland fire suppression, what is your vision, specific efforts to improve coordination of wildfire suppression among federal, state, tribal, local organizations?
The focus in, when I say interoperability, one of the areas that comes to mind immediately is thinking about how data is shared and managed. I can give you a little vignette. At one point when cell phones were originally able to take pictures and you were able to text a picture, which wasn't that long ago, right? What was happening is we would have firefighters that were out on the fire line within cell coverage, so more of a local fire as opposed to a rural fire. And they would take a picture because they were in a spot where they could see what the fire was doing, and they'd take a picture and they'd send it to someone who then would post it on a blog, send it to the news, put it on some other available media. And all of a sudden, the whole public, everybody else saw it, but the incident managers who were in camp were still operating on a cycle of gathering data. And so what was happening was we were just out of sync where we had this entire process in place to manage and keep people safe, but yet it wasn't moving at the same speed it needed to be as the rest of the technology advances. So one of the things that we're working on is a bit of coordination between the states, coordination between some of the tribes, but predominantly the federal agencies in the states. And that's about how we share data. There's numerous systems where data is captured. And ultimately, it's enter once, use many. And by that, I mean information is captured in one place. And when it's captured, then it's replicated off numerous systems. And that's really what has been valuable overall.
And can I ask a follow-up on that before we get to the – what are you doing – how are you standardizing systems and processes in that sense?
It's a great question, and it's something that I spend an incredible amount of time working on. How do we standardize this? And part of that is it's really hard to standardize processes, right? You ever jump in a car and the trunk button is either on the door in one car and it's under the latch in another place and it's under the seat in another, right? Everybody has their preferences. Everybody has their things that they really appreciate. And so a lot of conversation, a lot of building consensus among all the stakeholders, those 50 states and numerous territories, the tribes, the counties, other federal agencies. It's trying to create the best overall system where we have the most consensus. I have yet to find a way where we get 100% unanimous agreement, but we're working on it. That's what we strive for.
So, Brian, you laid out your vision for improved interoperability across, I would say, the whole community. Could you elaborate on what are some of the key challenges to achieving that interoperability? And I mean not only within DOI, but state, local, and federal levels.
So working across all those different levels, I think you're hearing a lot of themes as I'm talking today. So there's the people component. So all of our partners and our stakeholders working across and really identifying what those needs are, trying to figure out, okay, what is it that actually is needed in each of those areas? And does it financially make sense to do it? Those are two questions. Quite often we have the wants and the needs, and then how do we actually develop those or create those? Do we fund it? Do we look at partnering in ways with other organizations to actually make it happen? So the building consensus is really incredibly important. I think the other piece of this that's really important is working across the technology in a way that actually makes sense. And by that, I mean technology moves really fast. Mm-hmm. So making the investments in terms of infrastructure or some of the software that goes with it or some of the actual pieces of hardware, a lot of times by the time we have it in place and we're using it, it's already been updated, right? So how do we actually work across that? And I think a great example is some of the cloud computing solutions that we've been able to maximize on since they've been available. I mean, it's as changes are implemented, as software and hardware is upgraded, we're moving right along with it. And fire moves quickly. We need to make decisions fast. And what's happening these days sort of goes back to a previous question, but part of it is we're seeing fire 12 months out of the year now. Mm-hmm. Historically, fire seasons were a lot shorter, but we're seeing fire in every month out of the year. So we need to be able to be nimble, move quickly, and engage many of the issues as they arise.
How has Interior's Office of Wildland Fire improved coordination of fire suppression operations? We will ask its director, Brian Rice, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.